Seekers. Good evening. Friday night. Thank God. Right. This is the Malloy program. Thanks for tuning in. And for videoing in town, if you want to, where you're streaming. So just go to the appropriate site and hi. Beck is all over the place. Glenn Beck. There are more people out there trying to kill folks now because of Glenn Beck. Thursday night, Spokane police arrested a man waving a meat cleaver at the supporters of Senator Patty Murray before her debate with a teabag freak named Dino Rossi. I guess it was, Thursday night, last night. Officers released pictures of the weapons taken from this guy named Johnny Sealer, 50, when he was arrested outside Ferris High School on Spokane South Hill. Friends and family of Sealer told Channel 2 News, KRM News, that he is psychotic. Sealer's ex-girlfriend said, quote, he has no control of what he's doing. He's made death threats on people, end quote. Officer who arrested him said Sealer was holding a knife and yelling profanities while he drove past a group of Patty Murray supporters just before 5 p.m. The second time he drove by, he was waving a meat cleaver, making chopping motions. The officer said he slowed down his vehicle so the crowd could see the cleaver. When he drove by a third time, Spokane police officers were in the area and they arrested him for intimidation with a weapon. They also found multiple knives in the vehicle. And there's a picture of those multiple knives. So that's somebody who is overdosing on Glenn Beck. Here's another one. Last Friday, the guy who opened fire at a California elementary school playground was screaming, death to Obama. Death to Obama. Now, who do you suppose would inspire that? Of course, Glenn Beck. You know, the more these teabag monsters continue to get the publicity that mainstream media gives them, and I think corporate media finds them mildly amusing, but corporate media, being corporate media, has no choice but to give all these debates, so-called, lots and lots of television time, right? Like that situation the other night with Harry Reid. I'm not saying Harry Reid's a great debater, but oh my God, Sharon Angle, if you want to see the face of insanity, watch her. Unbelievable. More on her in a minute. Anyway, more and more deranged people are acting out these violent episodes with a target pointed directly at President Obama as they try to murder innocent people. And Glenn Beck is the chief instigator. He inspires most of these people to do this. Now, I said before that Glenn Beck should be arrested and put on trial as a co-conspirator with this poor, miserable bastard that tried to kill people at the Tide Center, 45-year-old Byron Williams, who says he was inspired by Glenn Beck. But anyway, back to the school playground, one of the witnesses to, this is last Friday's shooting, a campus monitor at the school for 17 years, said the guy, what's his name, Brendan O'Rourke, was yelling when he came onto the playground and started shooting. He was armed with a .357 Magnum revolver. The witness said he was shouting, death to Obama, kill all the little blanks, death to them. You can imagine, he wasn't talking about kids. You can imagine what the, probably the N-word. The playground supervisor said when she asked him what he was doing, he replied, this is a drill and these are blanks. The Secret Service now wants to talk with this guy and find out to what extent he's been inspired by Glenn Beck. last week, I made the very obvious connection between Glenn Beck and this poor, miserable Byron Williams, who shot the three California Highway Patrol officers, and it was on his way to the Tides Foundation to commit a mass killing. And I said that, you know, Beck inspired this guy. Beck should be tried as a co-conspirator. He should be arrested and put in jail. Beck is a multimillionaire. He's made a lot of money from the gullibility and stupidity of his cult followers. So he could bail himself out and so on and so forth. But he should go to jail and be put on trial. And this is at the Huffington Post today in an extraordinary move to end the inflammatory commentary coming from Glenn Beck, the founder and CEO of the Tides Foundation, which, of course, is a frequent Beck target. I think it was again today. Anyway, this guy has written advertisers asking them to remove their sponsorship of this program or risk having, quote, blood on their hands, end quote. Well, no kidding. I mean, it's going to happen. It's already happened. The guy that went nuts in the Holocaust Museum and killed the security guard, he was a Beck follower. These people are being inspired daily to go commit murder by Glenn Beck. The head of the Tides Foundation is Drummond Pike, who along with his organization was recently targeted by an assassin inspired by Beck's program. So Mr. Pike wrote a letter today to the chairman of the boards of J.P. Morgan Chase, Geico, Zurich Financial, Chrysler, Direct Holdings Americas, GlaxoSmithKline, AstraZeneca, Lilly Corporate Center, BP, and the Hartford Financial Services Group, Inc. Does this guy not know that all those people have already withdrawn their advertising? I don't know. Maybe it's the radio program they're talking about. In the letter, he detailed the alarm. Drummond Pike detailed the alarm he felt over having, quote, a person carrying numerous guns and body armor attempting to start a revolution by murdering my colleagues and me, end quote. He went on to say in his letter, to say we were shocked does not adequately describe our reaction. Imagine for a moment that you were us, and had it not been for a sharp-eyed highway patrolman, a heavily armed man in full body armor would have made it to the office with the intent to kill you and your colleagues. His motive? Apparently, it was because the charitable nonpartisan programs we run are deemed part of a conspiracy to undermine America and the capitalist system, which is hogwash. End quote. All of that comes from Beck. I wonder, you know, I realize that Murdoch is a psychopath, too. Murdoch wants to, you know, be the man behind the curtain pulling the levers. But Jesus Christ, Rupert, are you willing to have people murdered for your toxic narcissistic attitude? Are you? Apparently you are. Drummond Pike doesn't end there in his letter. Rather than chalking up the incident to the deranged psychosis of its practitioner, this Byron Williams, Pike places the blame on Beck. And in coming to the conclusion that nothing short of financial insolvency will stop Fox News, he asked the network's benefactors to take a stand or risk future violence. In his letter to these capitalists, he said, quote, I respectfully request that you bring this matter of your company's sponsorship of hate speech leading to violence to the attention of your fellow directors as soon as possible. I believe no responsible company should advertise on Fox due to its recent and ongoing deplorable conduct. He went on to say, while we may agree to disagree about the role our citizens and our government should play in promoting social justice and the common good, there should be no disagreement about what constitutes integrity and professionalism and responsibility, even in discourse, even when allowing for and encouraging contending diverse opinions intelligently argued. This is not a partisan issue. It's an American issue. No one, left or right, wants to see another Oklahoma City. Mr. Pike, you're wrong in that last part. You're absolutely wrong. Glenn Beck, every night he prays to his toy god for another Oklahoma City. Glenn Beck and his ilk want to see the streets run red in blood. They want to see schools bombed. They want to see synagogues, mosques, and churches set afire. Glenn Beck wants to see death even to a greater degree than Dick Cheney does. We'll be right back.
the warship. If he dies, he wants to go out of the sky. And there's nothing to eat that don't carry the stink of some waste dumped in the Nile. But one thing is certainly true. No one here knows what to do. And I'm sick of you. I'm sick of you.
Standing up to the flying monkey right, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. When we come back from the next break, I want you to hear, if you haven't heard it already, it's been all over the place. Speech, talk, point of view, I don't know how to describe it. You have to hear it. Made by the Houston, Texas City Council member. I think it was yesterday. That's coming up. Back to the crazy stuff with Beck. The Tides Foundation, that for some reason, I'd never heard of it. Beck goes after this stuff, and his deranged listeners, a certain percentage of them, they're all deranged, but a certain percentage of them will react like this, will do what Beck always says, listen between my sentences. And therein is the real message. And his message to people is, I want blood. I want to see people killing other people. I want this. I am your leader. I have a direct line to God. You saw me with 100,000 people in the streets a couple of weeks ago. I'm entitled. Go kill these people for me. Somebody start this war. I want to see blood. This is Beck. There is no question in my mind, or in anybody else's who is still rational in this sad country, that Beck is, first of all, nuts, but secondly, this is what he wants. The Tides Foundation is a nonpartisan entity whose stated goal is the promotion of social justice. That's it. But like the sick bastard said, Beck said, if you belong to a church that talks about social justice, leave, run away. Right? This is a not deranged human being. Anyway, the Tides Foundation had been remarkably silent with regards to the steady stream of filth coming from Beck's program, the attacks, the incident involving Byron Williams, however, and he described himself as a progressive hunter, someone who hunts progressive. That's a term coined by Beck. That's Beck's language. Come hunt me, you fat son of a bitch. The incident has undoubtedly forced the organization to recalibrate its public relations mindset. The CEO of Tides wrote an op-ed about the Williams incident shortly after it happened in late July. But targeting the program advertisers is a much bolder gesture. As Pike notes, both Media Matters and Color of Change have launched similar campaigns in the past, in the process draining Beck of more than 100 sponsors. Well, good luck, Mr. Drummond Pike, and the obvious answer here is to place armed guards now at the doorway of your trained armed guards. I'm not talking about rent-a-cops. I'm talking about, you know, Blackwater-type people, so that when the next Beck person doesn't stop to attempt to assassinate state police, when he gets to your front door, you can just shoot the son of a bitch down, or have your guard shoot him down. Just destroy him, because his mind is totally gone. He has listened to Beck. I have a picture that somebody sent me. You're not going to be able to see it unless you're watching on Ustream. But I'll hold it up here. It's a picture from a teabag rally. And a rather corpulent individual is hanging up a sign that says, the American taxpayers are the Jews for Obama's ovens. Let me, can you see that? There you go. People watching on Ustream can probably see that if I can hold it still. The American taxpayers are the Jews for Obama's ovens. I didn't know Obama had ovens, but apparently Glenn Beck does. And this is the kind of stuff that the hate mongers on the right want to see develop into full-scale attacks, American on American. This is what they lust after. This is better than sex for these people. And when Beck whines about studying progressive attitudes makes him sick, yeah, of course it does, because I think he realizes the worms inside his own body, the destruction inside his own body. That's why he's getting all these tests done or something. I don't know. Glenn, you're a piece of human waste unlike any I've ever come across in my lifetime. And eventually I think you're going to get your wish. There are going to be people who will kill to satisfy the demons you've unleashed in their heads. And his half-witted followers go to these websites, the blog sites, where, you know, audio recordings of what I say are put up, especially about Beck. And if you read the comments underneath the audio about what these people are saying about me, whoa! All right, when we come back, I want you to hear this, because Beck also promotes hatred against homosexuals. He also promotes hatred, which can result in death and suicides of young gay kids. Stick around. Before the hour. This man's name is Joel Burns. He's probably in his mid-30s. He is a Houston City Council member. Listen to what he had to say last night.
Tonight I ask my colleagues' indulgence in allowing me to use my announcement time to talk briefly about another issue that pulls at my heart. Ron, would you go ahead and run the parents of Asher Brown, who you can see above, complained to school officials in the Cypress Fairbanks ISD outside of Houston that their son was being bullied and harassed in school. The bullies called him faggot and queer. They shoved him, they punched him, and in spite of his parents' calls to counselors and principals, the harassment, intimidation, and threats continued. For years, it continued. A couple of weeks ago, after being bullied at school, Asher went home, found his father's gun, and shot himself in the head. His father found Asher dead when he came home from work. Asher was 13 years old. I'd like for you to look at his face. Unlike Asher, Indiana teen Billy Lucas, never self-identified as gay, but was perceived to be by bullies who harassed him daily at the Greenberg Community High School. 3 weeks ago, he hung himself in his grandparents' barn. He was 15 years old. Minnesota 15-year-old Justin Auberg came out to friends at age 13, after which the harassment and bullying began. It grew as he moved from middle school to high school. When he found the harassment more than he could bear, he hung himself in his room and was found by his mother. Classmates started teasing and name-calling Seth Walsh in the fourth grade. It continued through his middle school years, where other students told him the world didn't need another queer, and that he should, quote, go hang himself. On September 18th, after being threatened by a group of older teens, he went home, threw a noose around a tree branch, and he did just that. He hung himself in his backyard. His mother saw him, pulled him down. Seth survived on life support for 9 days before dying a couple of weeks ago. He was 13 years old. Teen bullying and suicide has reached an epidemic in our country, especially among gay and lesbian youth, those perceived to be gay, or kids who are just different. In recent weeks, New Jersey teen Tyler Clementi jumped off a bridge to his death after his roommate outed him on the internet. Rhode Island teen Raymond Chase hung himself in his dorm room. And we learned just yesterday of Oklahoma teen Zach Harrington, who killed himself after attending a city council meeting in Norman, Oklahoma, where speakers made disparaging anti-gay remarks. I would like to talk to the 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, and 17-year-olds at Pascal and at Arlington Heights and at Trimble Tech High Schools or at Daggett and Rosemont Middle Schools or any school in Fort Worth or anywhere across the country for that matter. I know that life can seem unbearable. I know that the people in your household or in your school may not understand you and that they may even physically harm you. But I want you to know that it gets better. When I was 13, I was a skinny, lanky, awkward teen who had grown too tall too fast, who would stumble over my own feet. I was the son of a Methodist church pianist named Jeanette and a cowboy named fittingly Butch in Crowley, Texas. As their son and as a kid in a small town, there was a certain image of who I thought I was supposed to be. But as I entered adolescence, I started having feelings that I didn't understand and couldn't explain, but I knew they didn't mesh with the image of what I thought I was supposed to be. One day when I was in the ninth grade, just starting Crowley High School, I was cornered after school by some older kids who roughed me up. They said that I was a faggot and that I should die and go to hell where I belonged. That erupted the fear that I had kept pushed down, that what I was beginning to feel on the inside must somehow be showing on the outside. Ashamed, humiliated, and confused, I went home. There must be something very wrong with me, I thought, something I could never let my family or anyone else know. I think I'm going to have too hard a time with the next couple of sentences that I wrote, and I don't want my mother and father to bear the pain of having hear me say them. I have never told this story to anyone, but the numerous suicides in recent days have upset me so much and have just torn at my heart. And even though there may be some political repercussions for telling my story, this story is not just for the adults who might choose or not choose to support me. This story is for the young people who might be holding that gun tonight, or the rope, or the pill bottle. You need to know that the story doesn't end where I didn't tell it on that unfortunate day. There is so, so, so much more. Yes, high school was difficult. Coming out was painful. But life got so much better for me. And I want to tell any teen who might see this, give yourself a chance to see just how much life, how much better life will get. And it will get better. You will get out of the household that doesn't accept you. You will get out of that high school, and you never have to deal with those jerks again if you don't want to. You will find and you will make new friends who will understand you, and life will get so, so, so much better. I look back and my life is full of so many happy memories that I wish I could share with those whose photos were shown up above earlier and those who have taken their lives. Memories that I wish I could share with the 13-year-old version of me on that very unfortunate day. If I could, I would take the 13-year-old me by the hand and take him to the campaign office in 1992 of then-Governor Clinton, where for a very speechless moment, my now partner J.D. Engel and I saw each other for the first time. I would take that 13-year-old me to the first day of spring in 1999, on a West Texas ranch hilltop, surrounded by a dozen head of black Angus cattle who thought we were there to feed. And as the sun set, turning the sky pink and purple and orange in a way that only a West Texas sunset can, I jabbed my hands into my jeans pocket and pulled out two rings that I'd literally spent my last dollar on and slipped one onto JD's hand and asked him to spend the rest of his life with me. I would take the 13-year-old Joel to election night in 2007 in a room filled with countless family and friends, erupting in cheers when it became clear that I would win my first election, so that they could see the love and support for me that was in the room that night. I would take the 13-year-old me to just a few days ago at Baylor Hospital to see our dad. Our dad, who's no longer the 40-year-old tough cowboy that he was when I was 13, who I thought would never understand me, but is now the 67-year-old dad, still pretty tough cowboy, who has grown older. And the 13-year-old me would see me today holding my dad's weathered hand and see my dad as he woke up from his operation and him squeeze my hand and look up at me and say, Joel, I'm so glad you're here today. And me say back to my dad, I am too, Daddy. I am too. To those who are feeling very alone tonight, please know that I understand how you feel. That things will get easier. Please stick around to make those happy memories for yourself. It may not seem like it tonight, but they will. And the attitudes of society will change. Please live long enough to be there to see it. To JD and the rest of my family, I am sorry for you learning of this painful personal story in this public way for the first time. But know that I am able to tell it because of your love for me. And Mom and Dad, I'm alive today because you love me. Again, attitudes will change. Life will get better. And you will have a lifetime of happy memories if you just allow yourself and give yourself the time to make them. Thank you.
What was interesting and very touching, if you saw the video, was that the Fort Worth, Texas City Council gave Joel Burns a standing ovation. I said Houston, I think, earlier. It was Fort Worth, Texas. And his speech, of course, has to do with this horrible increase of teenagers, kids that are committing suicide because of what is heaped on them because they happen to be gay. I don't think there's a Republican candidate out there for office, unless it's one of these poor, misguided log cabin Republicans. I don't think there's a Republican candidate for any office out there who would not advocate that people who happen to be gay are less of a human being than people who are not.
It's more Mike Malone. I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away. I'm gonna leave the city, got to get away. All this fussing and fighting.
10 before the hour. Like I said, I'm sure you've probably seen that video. an unedited, unexpurgated version was available on CNN this afternoon and MSNBC. And I think even, what's her name, who's the woman on ABC Nightly News, Diane Sawyer, I think she even ran a few seconds of it. But the reason I wanted to run it is that, you know, and I saw this guy last night on television. I wasn't sure what was about to happen. What he started with, and we left this part off because we had to get it into this time available to us, and I wanted to get the pertinent things he was saying about being gay. But the way he started out, it was Breast Cancer Awareness Day, and a lot of people in that city council meeting were wearing a pink shirt. And he acknowledged that breast cancer awareness and how it's only through research and development and struggling against this disease that perhaps a cure someday might be found. And then he shifted into what you heard. Christians in this country, Muslims in this country, and Orthodox Jews in this country are not only hypocritical about this issue, they're also two-faced. You know, they all declare themselves to be about justice. The Jews do, about justice. The Christians declare themselves to be about love, and the Muslims declare themselves to be about knowledge and enlightenment. And all three religions are as guilty of driving these kids to suicide as Glenn Beck is guilty of driving people to try to murder, mass murder at the Tides Foundation or the Holocaust Museum or on a street corner. This vitriol and hatred directed against gay people is, I don't know, it's been beyond my ability to comprehend for probably half a century. I don't get this. I don't know where this comes from. Now, the Catholics and the Christians and the Orthodox Jews and the Muslims will tell you it comes from their holy books. But there are a lot of things in these so-called holy books that are irrational as hell. I mean, they're suicidal, they're murderous, they involve incest, rape, mass killing. The holy books of these three religions are just cesspools of the worst kind of perversion. I mean, if you sat down to come up with a miserable, bloody history of the human race, and you used as your reference points these holy writ from these religions, you'd have to step back at some point and wonder how in the hell human beings got as far as they have. You know, in a manner of speaking. But this demonizing and condemnation of people because of their sexual orientation, I can't understand that. I mean, I can understand a psychopath like Glenn Beck, who makes a lot of money for another psychopath, Rupert Murdoch, and I can understand Christian fundamentalists who want to slaughter everybody but themselves, so that Jesus will be very pleased, their muscular Jesus will be very pleased and come back and scoop them up and take them to heaven. But this constant drumbeat that teenagers pick up on and then turn around and torture other children into suicide, what do you people, you homophobes, get out of that? What part of you is satisfied by doing that? People don't do things unless there's a satisfaction, perverse or otherwise. But what is it about demonizing kids and pushing them to the point of gruesome suicide when their lives are just starting. What is that? What is about that, that you homophobes, you Christians, you're the ones I usually am talking to. The Jews and Muslims are going to have to work it out on their own. But you Christians, what do you get out of this? Does this make Jesus love you more? You know, sticking with the child analogy, it was Jesus who said, suffer the little children to come unto me, for such is the kingdom of heaven. He didn't say, suffer the little non-homosexual children to come unto me. I'm telling you, all religion is a form of insanity to begin with. It just is, by definition. I don't care if that offends you or you agree with it. It is. But to promote your insanity outside your own addled head to the point where you would drive children to commit suicide, do you think your God or your Savior looks at that and wants to high-five you and say, way to go? That's wonderful. That's why I created you, so that you could drive children to suicide. Do you think that? Apparently you do. Well, let me just say from the bottom of my heart, may God, your God, damn you. We'll be back. Stay with us. This hour, we're going to do podcast trivia, where, if you are slick enough, you can win a one-year subscription to podcast downloads of this program. Free! Yes! We're $59.60, and given the number of shows we do in a given year, that means each program is worth 25 cents. So, to the right-wingers who call this a two-bit radio program, you're absolutely right! So, Kathy will set the phones up towards the, I guess during the break at the bottom of the hour when we come back. If you want to play, just call in, and if we get your call, we'll ask you a question, multiple choice answer, and if you get it right, bingo, you win a one-year subscription, podcast, downloads, commercial-free of the program. All right? You remember Terry Jones, the pastor of that little jerkwad church down in Gainesville that said on September 11th he was going to burn Korans, and fellow American citizens of his sent him hundreds of them. This is a sick, sick society. Well, at the height of all that tension, that this freakish man of God had developed. A New Jersey car dealer offered Terry Jones, the pastor of this clutch of idiots, a new car if he would back off his Koran-burning plans. And now the Reverend Terry says he wants the dealer, a guy named Brad Benson of South Brunswick, New Jersey, who owns a Mitsubishi Hyundai dealership. The pastor wants Brad Benson to make good on the deal. Reverend Jones told the Associated Press he plans to... I could read this quietly, and I can't read it to you without laughing. Reverend Terry Jones told the Associated Press he plans to donate the car to an organization that helps abused Muslim women. That's what he's going to do, right? He was going to burn Qurans because they are filthy devils, and he just wants the car so he can donate it to an organization that helps abused Muslim women. That would be just every Muslim woman, pretty much, wouldn't it? If they're fundamentalists, just like every Orthodox Jewish woman is abused, maybe not physically, but she certainly is abused emotionally and spiritually. Every fundamentalist Christian woman is abused psychologically and spiritually because they are, these women are, after all, secondary to men. They have no rights, especially not in church. And was it Paul the Apostle who warned women to shut up in church? So whatever. I frankly don't care. But when he talks about donating the car to an organization that helps abuse Muslim women, you have to laugh. I have to laugh at that. It's like, are you kidding? He told the AP by telephone from California, where he was taping television appearances. He said, "We are not trying to profit from this. We are not keeping the car for ourselves." You know, it's bad enough when somebody refers to himself in the third person singular, but when they do it in the third person plural, we are not keeping the car for ourselves. How many of you are there, you dumbass, huh? Oh, never mind. Then we get into your three faces of Terry thing. Now, the dealer is Brad Benson. He's a former center with the New York Giants football team. He is known up there apparently for his quirky radio spots promoting his very successful car dealership. And in one of them, he offered Reverend Jones the free use of a new car for a year. So I don't know how Pastor Terry is going to donate it to an organization that helps abuse Muslim women if he only gets it for a year. But anyway, Brad Benson, the former center for the Giants, said he was surprised when a representative for Pastor Jones called to collect on the offer of the 2011 Hyundai Accent. It has a retail value of about $14,200. Benson said, quote, "They said unless I was doing false advertising, they would like to arrange to pick up the car." End quote. Benson suspected a hoax, and he asked that Jones send a copy of his driver's license, which he did. And Jones will also have to come to New Jersey at some point to fill out the paperwork. Benson said he decided to give Jones the car outright instead of the original deal. You can have a useful car for a year. So he wouldn't have any further connection to him. I don't blame him. I don't blame Brad Benson. Who wants to have any kind of dealings with a freak like Terry Jones? You know, whatever. He said, Benson said he had asked his listeners on one of his radio spots to call or write him as to whether or not he should keep his word and give Jones the car, and the vast majority of the 2,600 respondents said he should. Of course he should give him the car. Oh, my God. Where do I live? The Florida pastor has said all along that, he said he did not call off the burning in order to get the car. No, of course not. No, I didn't do that. He said all along that he believed God told him to burn the Islamic holy books. God told him to burn the books. And then God told him not to burn the books. This God of Terry Jones's is a strange, freakish God, isn't he? Burn them. No, don't burn it. What, you get a car? Oh, don't burn them. Get the car. This is God speaking. Yeah, yes, Your Majesty. Astonishing. So I'll be curious to see if Terry Jones is going to get his Mitsubishi or his Hyundai. I wonder what God tells him. Did God tell him to give it to an organization that takes care of abused Muslim women? Or is that something that Terry Jones just came up with on his own? Sick bastards. All of them. And nothing against Brad Benson, the dealer, the car dealer. But, I mean, what was it in Brad Benson's mind that told him that this freak in Florida would not burn, this religious freak would not burn some other group, religious group's holy books if he, Brad, offered a car? You know, it's like, I don't know, when God called Abraham up on the mountain and said, murder your kid to show that how much you love me, murder your child. And Abraham's going to do it. And then God said, wait a second. Okay, all right, wait. You see that Mitsubishi tied over there in the bushes? Go get that and bring it over here and beat the living hell out of it on the altar. Let your kid live. I mean, what is up with these people? Yeah, it is. Like Oral Roberts getting called home. If I don't raise $2.5 million, God's going to call me home. He is. God loves money more than he loves me. He's going to... All right. We have a break. Stick around. When we come back, 12 zeros. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
For so long, when for so many thousand years I've watched y'all do so wrong, do you really think that spilling blood is not a mortal sin? Better take a minute or two to read that book again. Yeah, you won't purge those demons with 1,000 half-ton bombs. This ain't no TV movie, not a news show or sitcom. It's misery, and can't you see how weary and how sad? How disappointed I am after the golden chance you had. Those soldiers are somebody's sons, their father's uncles too. If you've been born a second later, that just might be you. Have you prayed for a way to forgive your latest enemy? Well, then do not do it in my name. Yeah, don't blame it on me.
It's more Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Kathy's going to open the phones now. Number's 877-99-MALLOY. 877-996-2556 for podcast trivia. 12 zeros. Bruce Enberg writes in, a.k.a. Prairie 2. The Dow was down again today on news of weak retail sales and a low core inflation number, and that has Ben Bernanke worried. He was out beating the drum again for more quantitative easing. That's printing money for you English speakers. The Fed chairman, Bernanke, has his hair on fire over the idea that we will drop over the edge into a deflationary spiral. His determination to do something about it is making him less than popular with some people on Wall Street. Most investors want to see a lot more free money since that will drive up the market, but the ones that are sitting on trillions in cash waiting for the market to crash so they can buy for literally pennies on the dollar are steaming. They are calling Bernanke clueless, and they are giving dire warnings about hyperinflation They are predicting runaway government since Congress doesn't need to pay its bills with Bernanke printing money. These critics, who are really just shills for people holding dollars, these critics point to Bernanke's admission that he is really in uncharted territory when it comes to printing this much money. He didn't put it in such plain English, but he said it anyway. Of course, the Weimar Republic of Germany comes to mind. They added 12 zeros to the mark in just 3 years. As scary as hyperinflation sounds, the opposite, or deflation, is the wealth destroyer for us peasants. Deflation works great for the wealthy, especially if they are prepared for it in advance by accumulating trillions in cash. If you have a mortgage or other debt, making your payments after a round of deflation has devastated the economy, then becomes impossible, and you find out the difference between being a peasant and a serf. If the Fed is successful in creating inflation, then the corporations holding that $3 trillion in cash will have no choice but to spend it. And that could be a good thing if it doesn't get out of hand. That is, of course, the $64 quadrillion question. That's the $64,000 question after you add those 12 zeros for inflation. I heard a little guy down at the beer hall who says he knows who's to blame. And then he gave me this great brown shirt. Prairie2.com. Prairie 2 is getting very literary. He really is. Prairie 2's financial reports are starting to read like little slices of history wrapped up in an enigma. John Boehner, did you see this? The front page of New York Times today. Boehner says he wants, what did he say? Here's the sentence. John Boehner, the House Republican leader, laments that the America he grew up in has been snuffed out, his words, by Democrats. Snuffed out by Democrats. I was talking with William out in West Hollywood. West Hollywood? Hollywood? Talking to William in Hollywood via email tonight. And we were talking about a little bit about the good old days. But what Boehner's talking about, along with the article, there is a picture here. If you're watching on Ustream, you see that picture? I'm sorry, it's not better. There are 50 guys there. It's from Moeller High School in his hometown, and which is Reading, Ohio. I guess they pronounce it Reading. And it was a class trip that Boehner took when he was in high school, and there he is in the picture. But the interesting part, there are 50 boys here, 50 of them. 49 of them are white. 49 are white. This is the world Boehner grew up in, right? So Boehner wants it like it was back in the day. And, you know, who can blame the poor old bastard? You know, he grew up in a small town where his old man owned a bar. And, you know, if your dad owns a bar, woo-hoo! I mean, you're right there, right? So anyway, I'm not going to bore you with the article about Boehner talking about how he wants things the way it was when he grew up in the 50s. But I thought the picture was very telling, his class picture. Yeah, they, you know, there's a lot to say for nostalgia. There's a lot to say. I grew up in a very mixed neighborhood, black, white, Catholics, Jews, Protestants. And as far as gay kids were concerned, I don't know if there were gay kids, and I'm sure there were. They were deeply hidden away from us, you know, normal boys, right? Because we normal boys would have probably done the same thing 50 years ago that these little pricks are doing today to kids who happen to be gay. But I guess Boehner, you know, he grew up in southern Ohio, and I'm sure in a Catholic family. And I'm sure in a Catholic family, in a Catholic high school in the 50s in southern Ohio, you really had a perfect little life, didn't you? Especially if your old man owned a bar. Woo!
writing on the wall. We did our best work in the dark. We did our thinking on the run. We would hang together, or they hang us one by one.
Trivia, Truth Seekers, where if you get the right answer to our easy-to-answer question, you will win a one-year subscription to Molloy Program podcast downloads free, free, free. All you have to do is get it right. All right, you ready to do this? Cut the music, maestro. James is in Los Angeles. Hey, James. Hey, James.
Oh, my God, I'm very excited to talk to you finally.
Here you are. You ready to play podcast trivia?
Yes, Mike.
Okay, all right. Now, don't be nervous, okay?
Okay.
All right. What Republican candidate for governor has on his campaign staff several convicted criminals? He has emailed videos of horse-on-woman sex. He has sent as a photoshopped image of President Obama as a pimp and Michelle Obama as a whore, and recently threatened to kill a newspaper reporter. Was it A, Georgia's Nathan Deal, B, Pennsylvania's Tom Corbett, C, Arizona's Jan Brewer, or D, New York's Carl Paladino?
The answer to that one is D, Mike.
Carl
Paladino.
Paladino. You're absolutely right.
Oh, yeah.
Well, see, I told you they weren't all that difficult, right? Each one of the other ones also has made outrageous, stupid, false, and ignorant claims. But Paladino really gets the prize for being a complete jackass, and you get the prize for being able to identify him as such. All right, James, hold on. Kathy's going to get the pertinent information, and congratulations. Carl Paladino.
Hey, what's the problem? Has he got a problem? I apologize if it offended anybody. Well, you got a problem?
I don't know if you saw it or excerpts from it. You probably did. Excerpts from this so-called debate last night between a really, truly insane person. That would be Sharon Angle out of Nevada. Now, how do I know she's insane? Well, if you listen to her, that gives you clue one. If you look at her and her facial expressions while she's demonstrating verbally that she's nuts, the facial expressions kind of add exclamation points to your thought, God, this woman's crazy. Bing, 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 bing. I don't think I've ever seen anything like it. She has the strangest look that can only come from somebody whose interior dialogue is just, I don't know, demons. And she's another one that said that God is directing her or something. I don't know. Now, up against her was one of the worst debaters and the guy who leads the Democrats into the cloakroom to wet their pants every time the Republicans threaten a filibuster, and that would be old Harry Reid. For the people are going to vote for Harry Reid. Oh, my God. But to not vote for Harry Reid and vote for Sharon Angle, what am I talking about? I don't give a tinker's damn about this stuff. I really don't. What I'm trying to talk about here, got an email from Al Babe, who writes, Sharon Angle tells Harry Reid to man up regarding the need to privatize Social Security. Sharon Angle, you know, whose husband is, I don't know, all these teabaggers are lying sons of bitches. They're all sucking at the public trough. They just don't want the dark-skinned people sucking at the same public trough, because if the dark-skinned people suck at the same public trough, then the public trough will run out before the white people die. Of course, the white people don't think they're ever going to die. What was this report I read yesterday or today? The longest-lived people in the United States happen to be of Hispanic descent. You know, it's not whites, it's not blacks, it's Latinos. I just found that funny. I don't know why. Anyway, she tells Harry Reid to man up. And the irony of this, Al Bainbrice, is just too weird. An arrogant, fear-mongering, extremist conservative who wants to get rid of Social Security, even though her husband is on it, and any kind of social medicine, even though her husband is on it, and thinks that people on unemployment are lazy and should just get a job. Al Babe writes, I assume the Angle knows what's going on. She knows what the Conservative Party wants to do, and she states it plainly and simply. But do the idiots that follow her around and nip at her pompous pseudo-dominatrix heels have a clue? Did they actually hear her? Did they even listen? Are all their parents so well off that they don't need Social Security or Medicare? Or these simpleton manipulators want us to believe they were against the bankster's bailout, yet they want the very same thieves to be in charge of Social Security? This anti-woman's lib mental deficient is telling a man to man up. This dried-up, obtuse hypocrite gives me the willies. Al Babe. Yeah, the pseudo-dominatrix thing, I hadn't thought about that. That's the I knew I was getting an echo of something coming from Sharon Angle. You know, something, you know, from all the porn films I've watched. Well, they weren't films. And that's it, the dominatrix thing. That's it exactly. That's and can you imagine her male friends are the people are going to vote for? Oh, now don't send me an email if you're a female and say, oh, come on, Malloy, you're getting close to the line there of being anti-woman. No, I'm not. Sharon Angle, I'm not being anti-woman. She's a goddamn freak. She's a moron. She's crazy. And yet she's also leading Harry Reid in the polls in Nevada. Wouldn't that be something if some pseudo-dominatrix like this is able to knock off the Senate Majority Leader? Now, frankly, it shouldn't be so hard. The thing that bothers me is not knocking off Harry Reid. That should be easy for anyone who can stand up at a podium with Harry over there and just say, you know, go down the list, Harry, blah, 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 because Harry Reid is just going to stand there and take the abuse. I think there's some kind of a, there must be some kind of, something happened on that stage last night between Harry and Angle. Something happened. Sharon, I don't know, she just totally intimidated him. Every time she looked at him with that kind of, I don't know, that Al Babe has it right, that kind of pseudo-dominatrix thing, you know. Harry, you could just see Harry start to reach for the bathroom tissue because here comes the urine again. I mean, Harry Reid is just, this is the leader of the Senate Democrats? Did you watch any of that? I wish they would have had Pelosi in there or Barbara Boxer. As much as I don't care for either one, at least they would have, cut off Sharon Angle's head and handed it to her. Verbally, of course. Don't worry, teabaggers. I don't mean it literally. That's your gig. But it was just incredible. Incredible. There's nothing like more fear-mongering from these filthy Republicans like Sharon Angle than pushing the myth that we need to turn Social Security, the trust fund, over to to the people. And don't they want to get their hands on it? The average teabagger or right winger will say, well, Malloy, that shows what you don't know. The Social Security Trust Fund is broke. No, it's not. It never has been. Well, it's only going to last another 12 years. No, it's not. It's going to go on forever. You know, don't give me your crap. All right. I just don't want to hear it. But there are a lot of people out there who are just scared. And if there's one thing that Karl Rove taught Republican candidates, it's the same thing that Joseph Goebbels taught Karl Rove, and that is to use fear. Fear is a great motivator. Death panels, Social Security's running out, nuclear bombs. That's what Reagan was, you know, all about. Oh, well, we're going to put a shield over you. And so when the nuclear missiles come in, they'll go bing and just bounce off. It's just unbelievable. So, it's nothing like more fear-mongering, the terrorist attacks and Social Security and yada, 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 to inspire Republicans to get their asses out and vote. Meanwhile, Harry Reid stands there while this woman just whips his ass. I'm not saying on substance. Of course not on substance. There's no way. I'm talking about on just body language. Weird approach. I'm not talking about substance. Harry Reid and Sharon Angle are not in the same ballpark together. But Sharon Angle, she's going to get all those retirees out in Nevada who want to be whipped.
Synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
It's 10 before the hour. There's some breaking news here tonight. NBC News, Lisa Myers reported that Alan West, who is a representative in Florida's 22nd district, has criminal ties to the infamous motorcycle gang, the Outlaws. What makes the story interesting, on Monday, just passed, John Boehner campaigned with Alan West. He's a Tea Party darling. The Justice Department has said the Outlaws produce and distribute methamphetamine and engage in other criminal activities, including arson, homicide, and prostitution. This past Monday, Republican leader John Boehner was raising money for Alan West in Florida. This past Tuesday, National Republican Congressional Committee Executive Director Guy Harrison was touting West's candidacy. Republican leaders, including Eric Cantor and Sarah Palin, support Alan West. Alan West is the latest Republican candidate with an extremely disturbing past that Republican leader John Boehner and the NRCC have promoted. It's astonishing. The reason they can run criminals and nobody gives a goddamn, frankly, who represents the Republican Party, because the Republican Party has no plans to do anything except to open the envelope every morning and see what the orders are from corporate America. What are we supposed to do today? What part of the American society, the American system, are we supposed to destroy today? That's, you know. So it doesn't make any difference if you put a freak like Sharon Angle in, or a super freak like Sarah Palin eventually, or you know, a jive-talking would-be mafia hitman like Paladino, or this creepy West character who hangs out with the outlaws? I mean, they kind of make the Hell's Angels look like, I don't know, a bunch of old ladies, frankly. Outlaws are named the Outlaws for a very specific reason. I mean, just pick any of these people. Any of these candidates, these Republican teabag candidates. They're not running to govern. These people couldn't govern their asses out of a wet tissue. They're not running to govern. They're running, and they're being supported with millions of dollars. Sharon Angle raises $14 million over the weekend. Right. Right. Where do you suppose that came from?
Oh, well, Mike, it came from $20 and $50 donations from people who think Sharon Angle will make a great senator.
And Christine O'Donnell, she's another one. Ms. O'Donnell, what Supreme Court decision recent do you disagree with?
Well, Roe v. Wade.
No, honey, that was in 72.
Recently. Oh. Oh, gosh, I don't know. I'll put it up on my website later.
And the biggest dunce of all, Sarah Palin. Right? So, these Republican bagger freaks are not running for office and being supported by the Koch brothers and other wealthy billionaires in this country so that they can govern a certain way, away from the Democrats, away from this, away from or into that. That's not the objective here. The objective in getting these baggers elected is so they will then shut up, take their orders with the promise of lifetime employment until they're no longer. It's kind of like the way the various American administrations have used people like Manuel Noriega or Saddam Hussein or Ferdinand Marcos or the Shah of Iran. I mean, the list is endless. That's what corporate capitalist America is doing now domestically. The same thing that they did where it concerned foreign policy. Now it's domestic policy. Put in place people who will do exactly what they are told to do for the proper reward. What's the reward? They get to call themselves senator. They get to call themselves representative. They get a steady job. How many of these miserable bastards haven't had a job in 20 years? Now, a lot of people are without jobs here, but I mean, these people have never worked, most of them. So here they are, the teabag brigade. And the reason they are being so heavily supported and promoted by the very extremely wealthy capitalists is because these representatives will do precisely what they're told to do with no deviation at all. What was the paper they put together? Boner put together? Pledge. Yeah, Pledge to America. We're going to... hold on while I go smoke a cigarette. I would like things to be the way they were back in southern Ohio when I was a kid growing up. We could smoke cigarettes back then without some nun coming up. Well, the nuns would come up, you know, they would come up and they would say, don't smoke a cigarette. But that's how I want it. Did you see the picture of my my senior class of boys? Did you see that? We're on our way to Washington. And we brought our mascot with us. You can see him right there in the middle of the photo. The colored guy. Oh, I'm sorry. That's not what you're supposed to say now. The African-American guy. Well, you know, he went on to, he got a good job. He went to work in a factory somewhere in southern Ohio until all the jobs went away. Anybody got a smoke? Hold on a second. I go, hey, Mr. President, got one of your cigarettes? John Boner. All right, coming up after this break, stick around. You're going to love what's coming up next. The mortgage morass. And to Republicans, morass doesn't mean hitting on your secretary. Morass is, it's a sophisticated way of saying mess. You see all these Republicans out here, they're going, oh, Malloy's going to talk about getting morass. Woo! Let's stick around. We'll be right back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Completely aware of some of the right-wing blog spots that are usually run by people who can't get a real job and unchecked by any kind of journalistic approach to their topics. They present themselves as being journalistic, but in fact they are just sewer holes. And I'm real aware that every once in a while, since this program is so closely monitored by these vermin, they will take 6 or 7 minutes of the program and put it up on their websites, which I really appreciate. No, I really do. I love it. I love it when these right-wing vermin take something I've said. You know, I'll get to the weird part in a second, but this has happened periodically, to a greater degree over the past couple of weeks, because, you know, I've just had enough of these little rat bastards, and I don't hold back. And that usually gets me in trouble, but I don't care. Who do I get in trouble with? You know what I'm saying? My boss can't fire me because I don't want to fire myself. You understand what I'm saying? But anyway, there's several of these sites. 6 or 8 of them, and if one of them posts an audio from this program, they all do, and I love it. I hope you dumb bastards keep doing this. Keep doing it. It increases the internet flow around this program, which increases revenue, which increases viewership and listenership. Please keep doing it. Now, the funny part is, on the one hand, they say, he has no audience. Nobody pays attention to Malloy. If that were the case, you see, why do these right-wing blog spots just step on their own, you know, things in order to grab chunks of sound and post for their brain-dead vermin to listen to, right? And it's not just to listen to. They also are writing about us now. So I just want to say thank you, boys. As Lawrence Welk would say, who? As Lawrence Welk would say, thank you, boys. I appreciate the fact that you stupid right-wing bastards find this program with no audience so important that you post it all over the hell part of the internet. Because a lot of dead souls will read it. A lot of these right-wing dead people who think Dick Cheney is a glorious patriot will read it or listen to it and start grunting, and their feet start pawing the earth. And then word gets out, and all of a sudden, bada bing, bada bang, our audience goes up by factors of 2, 6, 20, 50. I love it. Keep doing it, right-wing boys. I can't wait until the time we finally make it to the absolute apex of right-wing sewerdom on the internet, and that will be Matt Drudge. Come on, Matt, you can do it. And I won't let anyone know you're gay. I really won't, because that's for you to finally come out and say when you finally get around to it. That's your business, nobody else's. But oh my God, please, Matt, So all of that is preamble to why do I so mercilessly go after a half-human being like Dick Cheney? You know, when I talk about he looks like he's near death. I think he died a long time ago, but he looks like he's near death, and he needs Muslim baby blood to drink to bring the peak of color back to his now gaunt and sunken cheeks. His daughter is insane. He's insane. And the reason his daughter now becomes fair game is because his daughter has thrust her ass into the face of America with her defense of her Nazi war criminal dad. Okay, that's fine. That's fine. Get it out there, baby. But don't start squealing and trying to hide behind your mother's lesbian pornography when somebody takes a shot back at you. Verbal shot, of course. You know what I mean there, right? The reason I go after Dick Cheney so much is because his bloodletting is astonishing. This man, probably more than any white man in the second half of the 20th century, is responsible for oceans of blood, even more so than Henry Kissinger. And that says something. Dick Cheney has had his murderous hands and has left his murderous fingerprints in and on so much of the mass killing that's gone on this planet since the 70s. He's always been there. He's like Zelig. No matter where you turn, there he is. The Middle East, Central America, South America, the Far East, Asia. It doesn't matter. There's Cheney. Somehow there's Cheney. This guy is a ghoul. He must be a vampire. Either that, or he is the most amoral individual ever, ever, ever to operate behind the scenes and up front in the United States government. This guy is so vile. So all you right-wing booger eaters who cluster around these senseless right-wing blog sites, just one question for you. I mean, I have a lot, but I don't want to overwhelm you with more than one question. Where in the hell were you when your boy, your vampire leader, was ordering the deaths of thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of people for no reason other than the fact that their toy nation was sitting on top of an oil patch that Dick Cheney wanted? Where were you? You hypocritical little pricks. Every single one of you. So, to the right-wing websites, you just keep it up. Keep it up. Keep getting this program out there. Keep letting people know that Mike Malloy show, who has no listeners, is so goddamn important to you freaks that you're going to publicize it all over the internet. I love it. I love it. It proves once again the utter and absolute asininity of you people. But that's, you know, that is self-evident every time you open your mouths or sit down at your word processors. It really is. Dick Cheney is a murderer. He is a war criminal. The fact that he's still alive is proof, if you need it, that there is no God. If there were, Dick Cheney would have been removed a long time ago. The evil this cretin has put on this planet is beyond calculation. So to you right-wingers who suck up behind this demon as he wanders from continent to continent, no matter how many times some spiritual force tries to stake him in the heart, he continues to come back and come back and come back. There's got to be more death. There has to be more bloodletting. There has to be more insane wars. There has to be more of... That's Dick Cheney. Oh, and you you freakish anti-abortionists. You don't give a goddamn about fetuses. What you're about is controlling women. Where were you with your, ooh, ooh, that woman's about to go kill her baby. Ooh, ooh. When what she was about to do is exercise her right to privacy and remove a parasitic clump of cells from her body because she didn't want it, that left alone, would wither. But inside, a woman's body might develop into a human being. Where were you sons of bitches when Dick Cheney was butchering tens of thousands of children, living children, outside the womb children, ordering their death and destruction? Where were you, you hypocritical swine? Hypocritical swine, shame on you. Shame on you.
Must be heard. A sex change is the only certain way to preserve the sanctity of marriage. We are living in historic times. We are living in a time of great change. Our leadership and resolve can light the way for others. And having come this far, and the unfolding of the years, this country has a new friend called Vice President Cheney. Dick is a killer. 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 Dick is a killer.
Lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour.
Can't touch this.
Going as I usually do, on Sundays I always go to Week in Review section of the Times and look for Frank Rich. And the 2 or 3 days a week that Krugman writes for the Times, I always go immediately to the editorial page, op-ed page, and check out Krugman. Between Krugman and Rich and a couple, three people that contribute to this program on a regular basis with their writing, what else do you need to know? You know what I'm saying? Well, Krugman did it again today. He was talking about the mortgage morass. That was the title. Go look it up, right-wingers, and we're not going to wait for you. Morass, M-O-R-A-S-S. It doesn't mean you get to date more. Morass is, well, never mind. Anyway, American officials, as Krugman points out, used to tell other countries, didn't we? We used to just push their faces in their economic failings and tell them what they needed to do. You got to be more like us. Ah, you got to do more like what we're doing. And if you remember the Asian financial crisis in the 1990s, where it looked like Japan was going to become a wholly owned subsidiary of, Citibank or somebody, was a good example. And that led to a lot of self-satisfied moralizing over in this country. Oh, look at the Japanese. Remember what they were doing back in the 80s? The bastards bought Rockefeller Center, remember? Look at them now, you little devils. Right? Huh? I can remember the signs in the 80s during the bad old Reagan years when Reagan began the process of destroying the country, and we had 17%, 18% interest rates and 12%, 13% unemployment. You don't remember that, do you? And I remember the bumper stickers on the backs of cars that said, "Hungry? Try eating your Toyota." But I digress. When Japan collapsed and the so-called Asian tigers collapsed, Korea, Japan, Taiwan, or Formosa, take your pick, when everything was going to hell over in Asia, the idea of a Schadenfreude by the Americans became irresistible. And in 2000, Lawrence Summers, then the Treasury Secretary, declared that the keys to avoiding financial crisis were, quote, well-capitalized and supervised banks, effective corporate governance and bankruptcy codes, and credible means of contract enforcement. End quote. Now, what Larry Summers was saying 10 years ago, that these were the things the Asians lacked, but we had. Oh, yeah. Well-capitalized and supervised banks. Effective corporate governance. Ooh, didn't we have a class of winners running corporate America? Effective bankruptcy codes so that, you know, when things got out of hand, there was a way to cancel all the debt. And credible means of contract enforcement, like if you take a mortgage from a bank, you have a contract, and everything will be okay? We didn't have any of that. We had the illusion of it. We had the lies and deceptions that capitalist America put out there while capitalist America was undermining and destroying and eating at the foundation of everything in this country waiting for the collapse. Bingo! Here we are! And now the fascists are coming up out of the dirt to run the Republican Party and the Congress and the country and your life. It's going to be glorious. It's going to be wonderful. Krugman says the accounting scandals at Enron and WorldCom dispelled the myth of effective corporate governance. Indeed. And these days, the idea that our banks were well capitalized and supervised sounds like what it was then, although nobody knew it, a sick joke. Are you kidding me? And now, as Krugman says, the mortgage mess is making nonsense of claims that we have effective contract enforcement. In fact, the question now is whether our country or our economy is governed by any kind of rule of law. Well, Paul, I can jump in with my 25-cent opinion and say, hell no. Rule of law? There's one rule of law out there. Oh, by the way, remember when the Republicans marched across from the House into the Senate chambers to hold the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton? Rule of law, rule of law, rule of law, rule of law, woogle wobble, rule of law, woogle wobble, rule of law. Remember those little bastards with Henry Hyde and the rest? Rule of law. There is no rule of law in this country. There is one thing that rules and writes the laws, and that is capitalist, corporate America. The money, the bankers, the thieves, the liars, the sneaks, the cheats, the amoral bastards. Rule of law. All right, I'll give you the rest of the story when we come back.
To listen to right-wing radio, here's Mike Malloy.
25 before the hour. So, Krugman's column this morning, the mortgage morass. And again, for you right-wingers, morass doesn't mean cheating on your old lady. Krugman points out that the U.S. has always had kind of this attitude, we're going to tell the rest of the world how to run their economies, and if they don't do it the way we want them to do it, we'll just come in and destabilize their economies or ruin them, or bankrupt them, do whatever. 10 years ago, Larry Summers, then the Treasury Secretary, was lecturing the rest of the world about maintaining well-capitalized and supervised banks, effective corporate governance and bankruptcy codes, incredible means of contract enforcement. All right. The story, so all of which we did not have, as the subsequent 10 years have proven beyond doubt, beyond anybody's doubt. What we had in place was a capitalist system run by Republicans, run by corporatists, who said, let's screw them. Let's screw them to the wall. Let's
keep them occupied over here with the rhetoric while we take everything these stupid rubes have. Take their 401ks, take their bank accounts, drive their country into debt, ruin it all while we're talking about well-capitalized and supervised banks. That's what they did. And as your grandma used to tell you, the proof is in the pudding. Take a look around at the rubble that has been left by Republicans, by corporatists, by capitalists. And come November 2nd, hold on to your ass because we're going to do it again. There are still little bits and pieces that these vampires haven't vacuumed up. Well, after November 2nd, when the Republicans take control, according to the pundits, that'll be phased last. Story so far, as Grubin points out, housing bust, sustained high employment, epidemic of default on mortgages with millions of homeowners falling behind on their payments. So the companies that collect the payments on behalf of mortgage owners, not the person or the organization from whom you thought you were getting your house financed or with whom you thought it was getting financed. No. The servicers. They're like the people that used to go through Civil War battlefields or battlefields in the Middle Ages with a knife. And when they found grievously wounded people, they would cut their throats and put them out of their agony. And for performing this service for the opposing general, they got to relieve the corpse then of its money purse or its necklace or its jewelry or what have you. That's what servicers of these mortgages do. They foreclose, they seize homes on behalf of the mortgage owners. But do they really have the right to seize the homes? Huh? Krugman cites the case of one poor bastard in Florida whose home was taken even though he didn't even have a mortgage. But anyway, these players, these servicers, these companies that do the mercy killing out on the field of battle have been ignoring the law. As Krugman writes, courts have been approving foreclosures without requiring that mortgage servicers produce appropriate documentation. Instead, The judges, the courts, have relied on affidavits asserting that the papers are in order. Well, Your Honor, the papers are in order, and I assert that they are. Oh, okay. Well, bring it up here. Let me sign it and go take the family's house. And these affidavits that assert that the papers are in order are often produced by what now is, I don't know, kind of cutely referred to. It reminds me of a Saturday morning cartoon that, a kid watches when they're three. The affidavits are produced by robo-signers. Robo-signers. These are low-level employees who had no idea what they were doing. But by God, it's better than working at Burger King. What do I do? Sign this stuff. Oh, okay, give me a pen. I mean, for $14 an hour, people would do anything these days, right? The robo-signers, they sign the affidavits. I have read the entire history of this mortgage, and yes, I do find that the borrower is in serious default, and the home should be returned to the lender. There is no lender. And the person signing the affidavit is a goddamn liar, a freak, a Burger King employee who has been moved into banking and finance. And as Krugman says, now an awful truth is becoming apparent. In many cases, the documentation doesn't exist. The documentation to prove that the servicer's signature was valid. The documentation doesn't exist. Why? Well, in the greed frenzy that the capitalist banking institution in this country got involved in to produce this housing bubble, much of the home lending was undertaken by companies who didn't give a goddamn about anything, just trying to generate as much volume as possible. They were making loans left and right, and then the loans The people making loans, they didn't have any assets. They were not capitalized. There was nothing. The loans were immediately sold off to mortgage trusts, which in turn sliced and diced them into mortgage-backed securities. Oh, my goodness. And now all of a sudden, we have an instrument of capitalism that these greedy vermin will beat each other to the curb to get their hands on. Oh, give me some of that. Give me some of that. Give me some of it. Give it. Those are mine. The trusts were legally required to obtain and hold the mortgage notes that specified the borrower's obligations. There had to be contract agreements, right? And a means of contract enforcement, right? But it's now apparent that these kinds of little capitalist niceties were, more often than not, neglected. And this means, as Krugman writes, that many of the foreclosures now taking place are, in fact, illegal. And I might add, fraudulent. But isn't that what capitalism does? Come on! Even you brain-dead Berman who listen to right-wing radio and television and go to these right-wing blog sites and say, oh, look what this goddamn lawyer said about our beloved vampire Dick Cheney. Ah! Even you morons should be able to get this one through your head, right? Wrong. Never mind. As Krugman writes, it's a near certainty that significant numbers of borrowers are being and were defrauded, charged fees they don't actually owe, declared in default when by the terms of their loan agreements they aren't. But wait. I mean, let's pause Krugman for a second. Let me hit the hold button. Click. Okay. The right wingers who are going to take over the government of the United States on September 2nd or November 2nd have told you that everything that Krugman says, and I'm repeating here, is nonsense. This wasn't the mortgage lenders or the mortgage holders or the mortgage servicers, the people that wander around the battlefield cutting throats. No. All of this was caused by Acorn, a neighborhood organization that was set up to try to end the practice of redlining neighborhoods so people with jobs couldn't get mortgages. It was their fault. This is what Sharon Angel will tell you. This is what Christine O'Donnell will tell you. This is what Palladino, this is what all of these vermin, these right-wing, disgusting, fascist vermin will tell you. It was Acorn! So as Krugman says, if these trusts, so-called, can't produce proof that they actually own the mortgages against which they've been selling claims, the sponsors of the trust will face lawsuits from investors who bought these claims, right? You know, you've heard Prairie 2 write on this program about the trillions of dollars that are unaccounted for. The dumbasses, the greedy dumbasses who bought these sliced and diced mortgages, what are they going to do now that they're finding out that it was all fraud? Well, they're going to do the same thing they did to Bernie Madoff. They're going to sue him. But what are they going to collect? Right! Nothing! Or, as Krugman says, they will be making claims that are now in many cases worth only a small fraction of their face value. And who are the sponsors? Who are these people? Major financial institutions, the same institutions supposedly rescued by government programs last year. These are the people who are going to be sued. So the mortgage mess now threatens to produce yet another financial crisis. How much money does the FDIC have in order to shore up the banks that are going to continue and accelerate in collapsing? Well, more in a moment.
A paradise to live in or to stay. But believe it or not, you won't find it so hard if you ain't got the door right me. Maybe you want a house or a farm. Not do nobody no harm. Just take your vacations by the mountains or the sea.
Don't sell that old cow for a car. You might want to stay right where you are. Take a little advice from me. 'Cause I read the want ads every day. The voices in the paper always say, if you ain't got the do-re-mi, boy, if you ain't got the do-re-mi.
Before the hour. So, as Krugman asked in his column this morning, so what can be done about all this? And then he more or less answers his own question. He says, true to form, the Obama administration's response has been to oppose any action that might upset the banks.
Oh, the big socialist Barack Obama, right?
Like a temporary moratorium on foreclosures while some of these issues are resolved. Instead, the Obama administration, oh, come on. Instead, Obama is asking the banks very nicely to behave better and clean up their act. I mean, that's worked so well in the past, right?
Come on, boys. You know, I'm the first black president. You guys are making me look bad. I'm getting enough crap from the crazy people in America, which is 40% of the population. Can't you guys help me out a little bit?
No, we don't like you either. Now, the response from the flying monkey right is even worse. Republicans in Congress, like John Boehner, are just laying low. They're just waiting for November 3rd so they can start the step final of ending this country. But the Wall Street Journal's editorial page, you know, Rupert Murdoch's appendage, has come out dismissing the lack of proper documents is a triviality. Oh, what? There's no documents? Oh, who cares? Right? The great capitalist organ in this country, you'll pardon the expression, the Wall Street Journal, saying the documentation of mortgages and responsibility and who owes who what is a triviality. As Krugman writes, in effect, the editorial page writers are saying that if a bank says it owns your house, it owns your house. We should just take it at its word. Krugman says to me, this evokes the days when noblemen felt free to take whatever they wanted, knowing that peasants had no standing in the courts. But then I suspect that some people regard those as the good old days. Yes, Paul. You're right. And this is the direction we're heading. How many of us on the left have been talking about this for a couple of years now? A mortgagee, somebody who's trying desperately to make payments on a balloon note or an instrument that was they were lied to about what it meant, what it was, what the interest rate, what the payments are going to be. Here, just sign here. Just sign here, quick. Where? Here. Oh, okay. Do I get the house in? Yes. Those people who did the signing, according to the Wall Street Journal, according to Rupert Murdoch, according to all the fascists in this country, they have no standing in court. These are peasants. This is what the right wing is striving toward. And on November 3rd, when all of these glorious right wingers who want their country back assume power, as the pundits all and the polls all say will happen, yes! We are marching to Pretoria! What? When that happens on November 3rd, that's it. Krugman says, what should be happening? Well, the excesses of the bubble years have created a legal morass in which property rights are ill-defined because nobody has proper documentation. And where no clear property right exists, it's the government's job to create them. Why, of course, any fifth grader knows this. But the teabaggers don't have the sense of a fifth grader. This goddamn Christine O'Donnell, who only could wish
she was a witch. Can't even answer a question like Sarah Palin couldn't about Supreme Court decisions, any decision. So they are going to suggest that government has a right to create property rights where none exist? They want to destroy government. That's why they all want to go there. Well, come November 3rd, we're all set, right? Huh? Krugman closes by saying there are some good ideas out there. For example, the Center for American Progress has proposed giving mortgage counselors and other public entities the power to modify troubled loans directly, with their judgment standing, unless appealed by the mortgage servicer. And remember what the servicer is. That's the ghoul who wanders the battlefield looking for the grievously wounded whose throats they cut to put them out of their misery, ostensibly, and then they relieve them of their coin purses. Here, mate, give me that! What? These are loan servicers. Back in the day, they were called ghouls. Huh? As Krugman says, mortgage counselors with the power to modify would do a lot to clarify matters and to help extract us from the morass. One thing for sure, what we're doing now isn't working. Krugman in today's New York Times recommended reading, but what we're doing today is not supposed to work. It's supposed to continue the chaos, the fear, the uncertainty, the destruction, the end of the society, because out of that turmoil, whether it's here, Germany, Italy, Japan, Russia, out of that turmoil always arises the fascist leadership. Chile, Argentina, Mexico, pick a country. There's nothing unique about what's going on here. It's just as Sinclair Lewis said, when fascism comes to the United States, it'll be wrapped in a flag holding a Bible. Well, here it is. Listen, you have a great weekend, all right? I'll see you Monday. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. Have a great weekend, Kevin Kinney, wherever you are.